Hello Army, and welcome to the second episode of the Jedi Council. I'm Matt Kirby, and with me, as always, is the man with the biggest midichlorian dick in the galaxy, Jake Elliott.
Oh man, that's a great introduction. Did you introduce me that way last time?
No, this is what I've been working on this week.
All right, you definitely one-upped it from last time.
And our resident Sith Lord, David Isaac.
Hello. Oh my god, yes. I am feeling very Sithy lately.
Well, whether you're master or apprentice, we'll find out. And also joining us this week is Chris Gonzalez. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good, guys. How you doing?
Yeah, not bad. Not too bad. So before we jump right into some Jar Jar bashing, Chris, do you want to give us a little bit of a sort of backstory of your interest in Star Wars and how you sort of got into it?
Well, you know, Star Wars has been a part of my life for as long as I can remember. I actually don't ever remember a time not knowing what it was. So I've heard people always talk about the first time they saw it. I honestly don't remember the first time I saw it. I just always knew it was there. And I do remember seeing Jedi in the theater. That was my first Star Wars experience in the theater. And of course, it blew my mind. And from there, just been, you know, it's kind of when we had the dark times or whatever, kind of got away from it for a while. But once the Heir to the Empire came out, jumped right back in and just been a part of it ever since. Love it to death.
Awesome. Awesome.
How old are you, Chris?
I'm actually going to be 39 tomorrow.
Yeah. So, he's the same age as all the rest of us. I would have guessed.
David Isaacs is the old man.
Yeah. Yeah, I always, like, the minute someone starts bringing up the books, I'm like, they're about my age, but I'm wondering if I'm actually still the oldest. God damn it.
Sorry, dude. You always will be.
We should do a chapter by chapter podcast of the Zahn trilogy after this.
Oh, Jesus Christ. This is just not going to end, is it?
I've read those books in a long time.
Oh, God.
sorry, that was an aside.
No, that's fine. what are your memories of episode one then, Chris?
Episode one just happens to be my favorite movie-going experience in my life. And I know it's not because of the movie, it was because of the atmosphere. For the movie as well, you know, it took me a while to realize that, hey, you know what, this maybe ain't the greatest movie I've ever seen. But I know that it was one of those times, you know, I spent 11 hours at the theater just waiting to get in because, you know, it's not like they had assigned seats back then. And, you know, it was a group about maybe 12, 13 of us or something like that, and just making Taco Bell runs and hitting that stuff. And then, of course, we get to the movie, and, I mean, it was a rock concert. We were cheering for everything. They were cheering for the previews.
Excellent.
You know?
Awesome. I wish I had that sort of experience over here, but the UK public and UK filmgoers just aren't quite as enthusiastic as you guys, it seems.
Everyone we've had on so far is actually pretty favorable towards the movie, just in their overall feelings of it. So kind of a surprising thing to me.
We need to find someone that really hates it. That's what I want.
Yeah. Yeah, it shouldn't be a hard thing to do.
About 5 years ago, I'd have been your man. But, you know, I've kind of come around on things.
That's awesome.
Excellent. So, where were we last week? Can you remember last time? We just met the infamous Jar Jar Binks, hadn't we?
Yes.
Right now, Qui-Gon and Jar Jar are in a loving embrace.
In a loving embrace.
Before they get run over. Yeah.
Qui-Gon saves Jar Jar's life here.
He does. And that's what Jar Jar thinks. I think Qui-Gon just fell over, didn't he?
Well, whether accidental or not, I'm pretty sure Jar Jar was going to get mauled down by the Trade Federation droid transport vehicles. Well,
you'd think with ears and eyes that fucking big, he'd see what was going on. But obviously, he just sort of stood there and looking like a gormless Muppet.
I actually think if Qui-Gon wouldn't have saved him, Jar Jar would have accidentally destroyed the whole battalion and it ended this whole movie right there. So Qui-Gon actually did a giant disservice to everybody by saving Jar Jar.
So what you're saying is Qui-Gon is the same as the fucking gunner at the beginning of A New Hope. If he just hadn't asked for permission and took the shot, the Empire would never have had a problem.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, as seen by how Jar Jar reacts to danger in the later third of the movie, I'm pretty sure Jar Jar would have taken all these guys down.
Okay. So, yeah, so Qui-Gon saves Jar Jar's life, and then Jar Jar swears a life debt to him. And then they meet up with Obi-Wan, don't they? As he's being chased down by some droids on speeder bikes, speeder pogo sticks.
Those are staff
vehicles. I love those things.
No, they're an awesome design. I mean, that was one thing I forgot to mention last week. Was the one thing about Phantom Menace that has always stuck with me is some of the designs in it are just gorgeous. The ship designs, the droids, even the creature designs are really, really
yeah,
quite...
Yeah, can I talk about the STAP for a second?
Go for it, dude.
I'm going to vamp about the STAP. Someone look up what the acronym actually stands for while
I talk
about
it. It stands for Single Trooper Aerial Platform.
Thank you. The STAP, one thing interesting about the STAP vehicle was it was the very first image of the prequels as like a character thing that we got. It was the first action figure released for episode one. It came out like way before, I want to say even before the first trailer hit, but maybe a couple weeks after. So it was it came in this giant box. It was like, you know, the episode one preview figure from not Kenner, but whoever does the Star Wars figures now, Hasbro.
Yeah.
And so I just always remember it being like, the STAP always stands out to me every time I watch episode one is like that thing that I saw before I saw anything. And I've always thought it was a really great design. You know, it was our first look at the battle droid, and it's just a neat, like, vehicle.
Mm.
I wish they kind of would have used it more.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It kind of got lost after that first thing, because I don't think it even appears in the battle at the end, does it?
Yeah. And it's classic Star Wars, though, where they release a toy that you're really excited for, thinking it has some big involvement in the movie, but it's really just, you know, this one background moment.
Are you talking about Constable Zuvio?
Well, I'm talking, yes, same type of thing, exactly. So, and I don't know, I think, should we just start talking about Jar Jar at this point?
Yeah,
before
go
we
for
go
it.
Scene by scene?
Yeah. Go. Well, this is going to be our 2 hours.
I feel like someone should talk about Jar Jar before I talk about Jar Jar, because it'll be me defending against Jar Jar. I don't want to open.
My thoughts on Jar Jar, when I first saw it, it didn't bother me. It felt kiddish and childish, but it didn't bother me. I think the more I watched it, it bothered me. It's kind of overused. This is how I'm going to hook the kids kind of character. And the more I watch it, the more it actually makes me think that luck in the universe is kind of another force, because like Han Solo refers, you know, is kind of a lucky guy. Shit happens to him, but he always finds a way out of it one way or another. But he doesn't have the force. He doesn't use it. He has kind of a luck. And that's kind of what Jar Jar is. Jar Jar is pure luck, pure circumstances, you know?
Like, I've heard that before. I've heard all kinds of theories on Han and Jar Jar and all them, as they be what they call like force blessed or force kissed or something like that, where it's, you know, it's just that everything seems to fall their way.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I could see that. I mean, my joke about Jar Jar taking everyone down is basically implying that same kind of theory. So.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, I don't know. Jar Jar gets a lot of hate. I think one thing that makes it easy for me to stomach Jar Jar is that Jar Jar really isn't championed by the other characters very much. He's pretty much treated with disdain immediately by Qui-Gon.
Yeah.
I mean, like, in the scene we're talking about, Qui-Gon's like, you know, you almost got us killed. Are you brainless? You know? Right. So it's not, the movie isn't, like, the other characters aren't unaware of the annoyance that is Jar Jar, which the movie being self-aware about that makes me accept it a little bit more than I would otherwise if it was just this, like, blatant merchandise selling thing that everyone, like, was hugging also as well as characters. It's not really treated with that way. So it doesn't bother me too much. And I don't know. I've always just found it a little bit ridiculous. And actually some of the stuff I hate, don't get me wrong. Like when you're wasting time with Jar Jar sticking his nose in the pod racer and having his tongue stuck, like, fuck me silly. Like get that shit out of there, you know?
Yeah. But, and I think that's what a lot of people remember and why they have such disdain for Jar Jar. Because he is a fucking idiot character.
Yeah.
He's just dumb as fuck. And it does get kind of annoying. Like, if you had to be around someone like that all the fucking time, you just end up strangling them.
Yeah. I mean, he is just there as the comic relief on a lot of it. And that, I think, is what causes the aggression towards him. I think if he wasn't so stupid and haphazard with his surroundings and was just a bit goofy in the way he talks and his attitude, I think he wouldn't get quite as much hate as he does.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. And like I referred to this movie as kind of a goofy, you know, space road adventure. Like the Jar Jar character is kind of a quintessential character in that recipe, you know, just the cornball goofball character that, you know, is slightly annoying, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
You got to think.
Go for it.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, and you got to think, you know, with George Lucas directing this stuff, you know how huge a fan and how much he admires those old serials and all the classic film and stuff like that. And that's always a plot point or there's always a character like that in a bunch of those old movies, and especially in the serials and things like that, where you have the, you know, the asinine fool that just, how do you say, stumbles his way to the top.
Exactly. I believe Jar Jar's name came from like one of George Lucas's kids, like loving cars and mispronouncing the car when he would see the car and pointing and saying Jar Jar.
Ah, there we go.
Oh, I didn't know that. Didn't know that trivia.
I didn't know.
Every day. I thought that was a...
Getting back to that real quick, that scene with Qui-Gon and Jar Jar when they first meet. You know, he says, what are you, brainless? He goes, I spec. And he goes, the ability to speak doesn't make you intelligent. That's one of my favorite lines. I use that in real life.
Yeah, that is a great line from Qui-Gon. And like I said, that's more of that disdain towards Jar Jar that really helps make the whole thing tolerable. And me just punching myself in the face. So. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's funny. And I can't help but enjoy the troll factor a little bit. You know, like, people just hate it so much. And it, to me, it's never really been that bad, like the speak that they gave him or anything. So it's fun to do the Jar Jar speak and get everyone all riled up.
Definitely, definitely. So, Obi-Wan saves them from the stamp.
Stap, sorry.
And then they get taken to the bloody... Gungan village, isn't it, I suppose? The Gungan city underwater?
Well, they
head off to it.
This stuff's really ridiculous to me. You're exactly right. This is the scene where Jar Jar has this insane ritual that he has to do before he goes to Gungan city. It's like the triple spiral corkscrew dive.
The triple Wendy.
Yeah, that was...
You know, that was like one of the main... When they were talking about all that Darth Jar Jar stuff, you know, Jar Jar, Snoke, and all this bullshit. They were saying that was one of the reasons, one of the points of evidence for them. Well, how could he do this big jump with the, you know, double twisting, double tie, you know, dive and stuff like that?
Because he's part frog.
If he wasn't force sensitive.
Yes, because yeah, I agree with Matt's explanation, because he's part frog.
Yeah, that'll do.
There's a really bad cut in the movie here, too, that I don't know if it's my version or not. I've seen this movie a million times, and the last four times I've watched it, there's a cut that really bothers me where Jar Jar's right above the water, and they cut back to Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan in the water. It's just a really hard, unnatural cut.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I noticed it earlier tonight when watching it.
Yeah, so. I know that wasn't there before, so some goofy thing they added for a second has made some
where
jarring
he pops up
cut.
Out of the water.
Yeah.
So, like, they're walking in, and they're almost, like, chest deep, and then all of a sudden it's this, like, drastic cut to Jar Jar popping his head out of the water, saying something to him, and then dropping back down, and then cutting back to them.
That's the exact moment I'm talking about. It's a very, I guess, pardon the pun, jarring moment.
Yeah, it doesn't fit right. You're right. It looks like he was stopping to do something there. Like, there wasn't, I don't know, maybe there was a line he didn't want in there or something, but yeah. It wasn't needed.
I like the little doohickeys that Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon have to be able to swim to Gungan City. It's like basically just a little thing they put in their mouth with like two little flaps that go under their sides.
They were quite clever little things.
They're good to go.
Good.
I remember the action figures came with the versions of those that you like lost in like 4 seconds because they were tiny. So.
But when they come walking through the I guess, force field through the Gungan City, that's still a pretty damn good effect. It was like, I remember it reminded me of Stargate.
Yeah, but the trouble is you can see as they're walking through that all their fabric on the... There's no movement in the fabric, and then all of a sudden... Yeah,
that's true.
I noticed it earlier. I was thinking, oh, God, they just... A little bit of thought, and it would have been... made all that difference. I mean, even Qui-Gon's hair should have been moving, and it wasn't. They just walked through like they were walking into a room.
Yeah. They should go back and fix that.
Yeah, they fucking should. They did get sorted out Yoda. They should sort that out.
I like the shots you get to see of Jar Jar from behind here, actually. I think it shows... I think Jar Jar does have a pretty clever character design.
Mm.
And I really do like seeing like the bottom of his feet and how big and kind of like trunk-like they are. And
yeah.
Just the way his ears move while he's swimming. I think this is some of the best Jar Jar here.
And to be honest, the design of the city is quite gorgeous. It really is beautiful.
Yeah, Naboo is such a cool planet. It has so much going on compared to like any other Star Wars planet you'd seen before it at this time.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was the first one we really saw of a populated area. Because, I mean, in the first three, or sorry, four, five, and six, you never really got to see a populated planet.
Yeah, and everything's so single environment in the classic trilogy. It's the sand planet, and the ice planet, and the forest planet, and the cloud planet.
Whereas this one, you've just got a planet that's got all different environments and all different areas. And yeah, it really did start to open up the universe a lot, didn't it?
Yeah, I really like that a lot. We get Captain Tarples here right after the... Is it yay or nay on the special effect where they go through the wall? I think it still holds up too. I'm gonna stick with David.
I'm going with nay.
I was just watching it and I'm like, that's still kind of a great effect. Like it, you're right. They could tweak it and do it, but for the time of this movie, like if you think about it, it still holds up for what it's supposed to do. It is a Star Wars universe. Shit may not work the same. Like maybe it dries you off and all that shit as you come walking through.
You're watching it on VHS right now, too, so you have an excuse. Like, I'm watching it in 1080p, so I don't even know what my problem is. I guess I'm watching it again, and I guess you've ruined it for me, Matt.
Sorry. I take it all back.
All right, we see Captain Tarples for the first time as a character here. I don't really know like too much of his backstory, but I assume he's the military leader of a squad of military Gungans.
So, is he riding a seahorse?
Is it a seahorse? Those things have names too. They're is it a Cadu? Oh, my note didn't cover what their names are, but they have names too. But nonetheless, we see Captain Tarples. I think all the other Gungans and even the people that hate Episode 1, I think they just hate Jar Jar. I don't know if I'm blind to that, but all the other Gungans seem pretty okay, right?
Yeah, I've never heard anyone saying it was the Gungans. It was always just Jar Jar. Like, they point out Jar Jar.
But it didn't bother me.
I mean, when you're in the Gungan city, that's, you know, it they speak pretty much the same way, and it doesn't bother me there either.
Yeah, I love Tarple's line of the Yuuzhan in big doo-doo trouble, or what's that?
Oh, God.
Voodoo. Yeah. That's classic Star Wars, like, just goofy stuff to me, yeah. And I really kind of like it. I don't mind Captain Tarples at all.
No, he's good, quite a good character. And then we get taken in front of the Boss Nass.
Yes, Boss Nass.
Played by the one and only Brian Blessed.
Yeah, I really love Brian Blessed's performance here, too. I don't know. Some people who may be more familiar with him may be bothered by it, I guess.
No.
But he's not someone... Yeah.
I love like, it. Almost... It's him. It's his sort of character. Just little, but... A small character, but larger than life performance. I always like that.
Oh, yeah. It's
I don't mind Boss Nass, but I always had one issue. And why is he different? How come his eyes aren't on stalks like the rest of them? That's the part I could never understand.
Yeah, he is a complete, it seems like he's a completely different species than what Jar Jar is.
He's more of a toad than a frog.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he is not a Gungan. Jeez, I don't know that. I didn't include what species Boss Nass was in my notes either. But
no.
That's really fascinating. And maybe that is why he's the boss too, because they're like, "Well, you're the only one that's different. You've got the star on your belly, basically. So you're the leader." Yeah, that's really crazy. I don't know if I said it on the when we were just talking about the prequels or during last podcast, but mechaniques is one of my favorite Gungan words. Thanks to Boss Nass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a good word, that one.
I also love that they try to use like the Force ability on Boss Nass here.
But does
to
it
get
work?
Their way?
Does it work or not?
It seems like it does, and then it seems like it kind of doesn't in another spot where you're kind of like that. Why did it seemed like a little holy? I'm not sure exactly what happened.
He uses the mind trick, and then they give him the ship, and they give them the Jar Jar, or they don't give him Jar Jar, and Jar Jar tells them that they're being set up. So whether it works or not, no one really knows.
I don't think it ever works, honestly.
do you think they're really shit at it? Like, Qui-Gon just can't do it?
No, I don't think he's shit at it. I think now that we've brought up the Boss Nass thing, maybe just whatever he is completely immune, because we also see later on in the movie that Watto's the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you could easily say that, because it does very much seem like if you were being Jedi mind controlled, you wouldn't set these guys up to die.
No, good point.
So, I don't know. But I always thought this was one of the more subtle, interesting scenes in episode one, the whether or not Boss Nass is really being Jedi mind tricked here.
Yeah, it's not straight. It's not straight in the face, is it? There's no definitive answer. You could take it either way.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of fun.
So and they get the what's the fucking ship called? The
Bongo.
Bongo, yeah.
The Bongo, and take it through the planet core. Oh God, that's the only bit of that performance that makes me cringe, because it's so cheesy.
Yeah, and they focus in on the character.
Yeah,
the characters zoom in and the slow motion mouth movement.
It's a real tropey bit, isn't it? It just makes me cringe.
Yeah, I don't know. Star Wars is pretty much invented on a trope, though, so you can't get too mad at it, right?
I'm not mad at it. It just makes me cringe. That's all.
Yeah. So, oh shoot, can you pause the podcast for something?
Of course I can, dude.
For a second. All right.
And we're back.
All right, let's not yada yada past the Jar Jar life debt thing here. I wanted to talk about it before I move on to the Bongo stuff. I find it really interesting. I remember when the movie came out, it was one of those things that people talked about before the movie came out. We kind of knew that Jar Jar would have a life debt to Qui-Gon, but we didn't exactly know why, and a lot of people were comparing it to the Han and Chewie, like Qui-Gon and Jar Jar were going to be the Han and Chewie of this movie with their life debt. And I think, yeah, it was a little overboard on the speculation there with how that was going to play out. But I still think it's neat that it's like part of their culture. But again, just like the Jedi mind trick, it's kind of ambiguous, like whether or not Boss Nass truly gives a fuck about this life debt, or he's just sending Binks off to die another way.
I think it's a little bit from A and a little bit from B. He obviously appreciates the fact there's a life debt, but he sees an opportunity of getting rid of Jar Jar for good.
Yeah.
And I think that's more important to him, that he's like, shit, we can get rid of this guy without having to do a fucking thing. This is awesome.
Yeah, that's an aspect of Jar Jar I actually enjoy the more I think about. The fact that he's like this giant public menace to his entire like race.
No, I think you need to one up that to the entire galaxy.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you're right. I mean, that's definitely, we're going to talk about that more in the future, but yeah. Holy cow. All right. So anyway, we can move on to the Bongo.
Yeah.
You get lots of Jar Jar speak here. Go ahead, Matt.
Sorry. Yeah, no. So off they go through the planet core, and again we get lots of interesting created marine life. Goomba fish.
Gooberfish, I think, is what it
goober.
Is.
Is it gooberfish? Gooberfish.
Yeah.
So yeah, usual kind of fucking just scenery and shit that's going on in this, but and then they get caught by the gooberfish, don't they? Is it the gooberfish that catches them?
The very first creature they see ends up sticking it with its tongue while Jar Jar's describing how he got banished from Gungan City the first time.
Telling them that he's clumsy.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to make out really like the exact details of Jar Jar's banishment. Something to deal with a boom the gasser. And, you know, even Obi-Wan is just basically, like, looking at Jar Jar and his own master.
Just rolling his eyes, isn't he?
Yeah, there's a lot of subtle stuff between Obi-Wan and his master during all this Jar Jar stuff, where Obi-Wan is just like, what the fuck are you even doing with this guy? Why is this even a thing? Which makes me appreciate Jar Jar more. But yeah, you're right, Matt. You get the goober fish, and then it's the next thing that kills the goober fish.
Yeah. Always a bigger fish.
Always a bigger fish, yeah.
Always the bigger fish. And I saw this movie, you know, the 21 times in the theater, and at the moment where the biggest goober fish, like, takes the bite out of the other fish and the camera scales back, there was always a cigarette burn in the film.
Really?
So, no matter where I saw it, too. It was just because back in the day, you know, you just had the cigarette burns in the film, and it was always there at that moment.
Crazy.
So I just always, and I still, it's like it's one of those things, like they say, like when you lose an arm, like you feel the phantom arm, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like the phantom cigarette burn.
You
it's
can
like
still
I,
see it.
I still see it, even though it's not there because I saw it so many times during that moment. I think about that cigarette burn every time. So.
Wow, I saw it 14 times in the theater, and I'd never noticed that.
Yeah, it's just right there. It's not the thing that I guess you're normally looking at, and it's not I didn't notice it the first time, but once I picked up on it, I always saw it. So, there you go.
The one thing that always bothered me about this scene was the way it looked. Like, something always kind of looked off to me, and I think this is the one scene in this movie where it feels like they're on green screen and they're in one of those mechanical things that moves them around and shit. Like, it didn't feel natural to me. Like, out of all of this shit in Star Wars,
there's not
this
a fucking scene in Episode 1 that's natural and not done on green screen. I don't know what you're talking about.
No,
yeah,
no,
but he's saying this
that,
is the one
is
that feels the most
feels
like a universal.
Like, right.
Yeah.
Well, you know what made it even worse is that once they actually get through all the shit and they get to the top, you know, when they actually finally do surface and you see them coming out of like an actual physical built set, it looks so much different when it's the actual physical thing there than, you know, all that time swimming around underneath the water.
Yeah, you're right about that. I think it is jarring when they pop out at feed, and a lot of that stuff looks a lot more natural at that point. I do love the underwater adventure stuff does, like, the CG definitely doesn't hold up, and it does feel a little bit of the more green screeny stuff. But I still think it's fun seeing a lot of the creatures.
Yeah. I totally agree.
I like the bongo design a lot. Mm. The episode one Legos, when they came out with the movie, favorite one was the bongo. Yeah. It had like the seats for all three characters with the little bubble Legos and the spinner fin at the back of it and everything.
That was an awesome set. I remember having that one.
Yeah, so it kind of made me fall in love with that ship and this scene a little bit, how sweet that Lego toy was.
Definitely. So after they've dealt with the two fish, we get they get a power cut, don't they? Or they lose power, and Jar Jar starts to freak out.
Well, actually, hold on.
After the cigarette burn scene, we cut to the Trade Federation.
Right. Because they end up getting away and start going through the core of the planet, and then it cuts away to the Trade Federation ship.
Okay.
Yeah, we cut to the Trade Federation. This is where the Nemordians are discussing how it's going and we're trying to locate the Jedi and how what's going, you know, with the blockade. And we get a scene. This is where we first introduced Darth Maul, I believe, right?
No, because where they show Darth Maul is when I believe he's sitting down and he appears from behind, right?
Oh, it's not where they first, like, physically introduced Darth Maul, but
he mentions him, yes, that he was going to
send his apprentice.
Yeah, and then the Nemodians are a little bit about that.
Yeah.
A little bit concerned.
Yeah, they're not really keen on Jedi or Sith, are they?
No, they seem like the Nemodians are very strange. They seem to have they seem to be in a lot of power at this moment in the galaxy, but they don't seem to be very like witty or know what to do with said power.
Right.
So they're definitely one of the weirder races. Like I respect the Gungans almost more than the Nemodians. Like the Gungans know their place and know what they're doing. Like they're only fighting wars when they have to. Like the Trade Federation or the Nemodians are basically just assholes that are willing to go along with Dark Jedi and Sith and just be used as like a
just to get what they
face.
Want.
Yeah. Like they obviously can't do their dark government dealings like in their Sith persona. So they've just got this dumb, gullible race that they've pretty much like primed to do all this stuff. Like I guess wealth and the promised power is enough for them to take on all this stuff, right?
That's what it would seem like.
Kind of makes you wonder how long they were in league with Palpatine.
Yeah,
because I can't see how they would get into their position of power on their own.
Once they introduce Dooku, they seem like they're really in bed with Dooku too, as we see like in some of that stuff, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so.
So I don't know the Nemodian. I never really knew much about the Nemodians. Other than the like, as far as expanded universe stuff goes, beyond the prequels.
I've never really heard of them up until now.
But all right, yeah. So we get more stuff. It's after the big fish. It's the lights go off. Jar Jar becomes so fucking annoying at this point that even Qui-Gon himself has just had it and like knocks him out with some like Vulcan pinch. Like nerve pinch or something, right?
Yeah. And you kind of wonder, like, why he doesn't use this more often.
Well, I mean, most of the time, to be fair, they're on the move and they're on the run. And this is one of the few occasions where Jar Jar is just being super fucking annoying and they're in a vehicle. They can just knock him the fuck out. So, and again, it goes back to what I'm saying about how I can tolerate Jar Jar's. That's a funny moment. The audience definitely laughs at this moment when you see it for the first time opening night. Like the audience has already turned against Jar Jar. And so the movie seems a little bit like acknowledging that that's going to happen by even having stuff like this go on. Right.
Right.
All right. So after that, this is where we, we cut away again. We still don't see them get done with the space adventure or the submarine stuff. We cut to seeing the Trade Federation forces mobilizing and the really famous shot of Queen Amidala in her dress that's got the actual lights in the dress looking out the window.
So I noticed this must have been the easiest invasion ever. Like, no one, not even the fucking army of Naboo, do anything to stop any of this. They just waltz in there. There's no gunfire, no shot, nothing shot. They just waltz in and give up. And
I don't think these people have. I think they do kind of in the backstory imply that these people haven't really dealt with much war, like, at all, right? It seems like they're all about the art. Like, if they've got time to make dresses like Amidala's wearing, they're not in battles. You know?
I suppose, but they must still have an army. They've still got, you know, guards, and no one's even tried to pretend to do anything. I just think, what the fuck are you doing?
Even the ships, like the Naboo fighters, are like more aesthetically designed to just like look cool in paintings they paint.
Yeah. There's not much substance to their like fighting. Like, it seems like their guards are there just to protect the queen and not really fight.
Because even in the end scene in the
final battle, it's mostly Gungans you see fighting the Trade Federation. You don't see Naboo.
Exactly. That was exactly what I was going to say. There's not a Naboo human to be seen when all those bodies are needed to like halt the Trade Federation. I don't know if that's by, you know, if they're assholes or if they're just all, I really don't think there is much of a military force on that.
I don't think Naboo really has an army, if you will. I mean, I think they have like a small, like anti-air force or something like that. And maybe, you know, some security force in the city of Theed. But I mean, I think that was it.
So back to what Matt was saying, I mean, Matt, you're absolutely correct. This was indeed the easiest invasion they've ever did. God, you know the shot right before we see Amidala looking out the window at all the droids advancing? It's like a very scenery panoramic of Theed.
When the droid army's walking up the sort of main street, as you were.
Now, even before that,
on the green plains.
Yeah, you see the green plain shot, and then you see the scenery shot, and then you see Amidala looking out the window. That scenery shot in between was like the first widescreen image they showed anyone of Episode One. It was released as a Topps trading card.
All right.
And it was the first time we saw it, it was even just concept art, but it was just so, it was like the concept art for that shot. And it was like, here, exclusive Topps trading card, first image from Episode One. And it was that image. And so that was always an image that stuck out to me because it was just one that was burned into my brain before I even saw this movie.
I was going to say another little side note on that, where Amidala is looking out as they're coming in and she's standing there in the dress with the lights in them and stuff like that. There's an editing mistake there. You can actually see like the power cord going from her dress to the wall.
Wow. That's crazy. Well, I mean, I don't even know if that's an editing mistake. I mean, she has to plug her dress in, man. Look at that. Look at that thing. You'd have to plug it in too. I mean, I don't, you know, maybe. Oh, that's funny. But yeah, then we see him on the field. We see her looking out the window. Then we see him on the streets. And then we see another bad Nemodian choice, kind of, right? Basically, the two main guys just coming right out in the middle of this thing.
Yep. And I don't know whether that's you noticed it, but the green screen on that was absolutely awful. Because one of the guys actually walks off of the ramp to the side. Like, it is literally, it's so bad. And I know you're looking at it with eyes from now rather than then, but, you know, even that's not a good shot.
No, it definitely, it's one that definitely doesn't hold up. Yeah, we see this is where we finally see our principal characters emerge from the water, scaring the birds, coming out and looking around. Jar Jar wakes up just in time to be annoying again now that there's stuff to do. And then I believe we hard cut back to all of them walking down the stairs.
Yep, and they get, rather than the Noidians getting her to sign the treaty, they send her off to a camp, which seems a bit silly. But they get processed, as they say.
Yeah, the Nemodians just don't seem like they have their shit in order, or like they know what they're going to do at all. So they're completely reliant on whatever Sidious tells them to do next, I think.
Yeah, they're just following instructions and have no idea what they're supposed to do, I can't even think now.
So what the Nemodians do is they take all the important people and they put them in one group and they have the battle droids march them through
an open street.
Yeah.
And apparently none of these droids are in radio contact either.
No, not at all. They don't have like any kind of emergency kill switch or anything going on. That part always cracked me up, that they were just like, okay, all the important people here in Group A, we're going to march you out into this open area where the Jedi are waiting right above. Like, I don't even think you needed to be a Jedi at that point.
No, you didn't.
Drop on these guys.
No.
Oh, no.
Maybe with the laser fire and that kind of thing after you get the drop on them. But to get the actual drop, I think normal human skills would have worked.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because Jar Jar doesn't even make it down and he lives through this shit. Like, he ends up falling over the wall, getting hung up, and lands solidly on his neck. And stands up, walks around like nothing happened.
This is actually a moment where I think this is a really good moment of sound mixing during this whole battle. I just like the sounds of the lightsabers interwoven, believe it or not, with Jar Jar's kind of yelping and the noises that it's making as it's the laser shooting and the battle droids getting cut apart. I think this is some of the best sound mixing and editing in the film is during this quick little action burst.
Mm, definitely.
I would agree with that, but you know, I would say as far as sound editing and mixing goes with this movie in general, I think it's spectacular.
Oh yeah, yeah. I wasn't trying to disparage it. It's probably one of the best things this movie has going for it is the sound mixing and the sound editing. It's absolutely amazing. But this is one moment it really just stood out for me. Just so much going on it in one little quick burst of an action sequence. I always really thought it was a nice break from the monotonous marching.
Mm, definitely. So, Qui-Gon informs the Queen that the negotiations never happened and insists on getting her off planet to go and help, go and convince Palpatine to sort the Senate, get them to side with with Naboo. The Jedi sort out the battle droids that are guarding those lot of pilots that got on that ship. An awful lot. Which you never see again. If you watch it, there's an awful lot of pilots that get on that Nubian cruiser. You never need to see again. They attack those droids. And there's a bit when the battle droids approach the Jedi and ask what they're doing with the prisoners. And it... Is that supposed to be comical?
I don't know.
Is that droid being sarcastic?
Where he has kind of like the pregnant pause.
Yeah, he's like, stick him up kind of thing.
Yeah,
I think so. I think it's, you know, it's battle droid like Windows 10 version kind of, you know? and it took a minute, man. It's not in its programming for like the Jedi Qui-Gon. It's not the Terminator, you know. Battle Droid Vista. I think these things have already been established as like not being that. You know, you just point and shoot with these things.
Fair enough.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think we. Yeah, I'm taking your word for it.
I don't think we'd see a comic moment like this, like if a Droidica rolled out. The Droidica wouldn't roll out, see Qui-Gon, and they'd be like, oh,
do
yeah,
we, don't we, do we, don't we? Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't, this part didn't, do you not like this part?
No, I've got no problem with it. I was just unsure on whether, what everyone else thought, whether it was actually supposed to be comical or it was I don't know. Them showing how completely useless the droids actually are.
Yeah, I think it was kind of both, because it does, like, I think it was supposed to be funny, but like, it kind of always bothered me, like, why would a droid question Jedi where they're taken prisoners? Like, wouldn't they question another droid? Wouldn't that make sense to them? Like, but yeah, you're right. They are kind of just fucking point and shoot characters.
Yeah, it took a minute for it to process whatever decision it was going to make. It just couldn't instantly, like, it was inside of its brain. You'd probably see the little bar, or, you know, moving to 100% to figure out where it was going to go with all that. So, I don't know. I've always thought it was actually one of the more funny beats. Like, there's very few moments in episode one that are intentionally trying to be funny that actually land.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of those moments, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, a little fun bit of action here, where we see him after that moment that we dissect in Dell. That's great. I liked it, though. But yeah, we see a bit of an action sequence here. They cut all the guys up. We see Rick Olay for the first time. He's very much a Constable Zuvio, right?
Yep, definitely.
Yes.
Oh, man, I had to get my Rick Olay action figure before I saw the movie. You know, they're really smart with the action. That's how they do you on the action figure game. They're like, we're going to release 20 action figures before the movie comes out. You're not going to know who's important or who's cool. So you'll have to buy all 20 of them just in case, you know?
Yeah, that's it.
Just in case Rick Olay steals the fucking movie.
Yeah, that's how they Phasma you.
Oh, man. Yeah. At least Phasma looked cool. Like, even before they ruined it, like, at least it looked cool, right?
Yeah.
Like, Rick Olay is just like, he's just a guy. He's... It's like, oh man, I guess I did put him in my Naboo fighter like a dork, though.
Yeah, you did, Jake. Yeah, you did. So then we get the them escaping on the Nubium cruiser, and they trying to run the blockade, don't they? And then the shield generator gets
hit. Actually, this is also where you first see R2.
Now, this, we definitely can't poo-poo R2.
This is where my love of the film starts to fade.
Because they show R2?
Because I hate the fucking fact that George Lucas felt the need to make sure that everything was linked when it didn't need to be. You didn't need to see R2 here. You didn't need him in this film at all. And this is my worry with the entire Star Wars line, is that everything has to be linked together.
But Lucas always said that. Even before the prequels existed, Lucas always pontificated that the whole thing was the C-3PO R2-D2 story.
Yeah.
Like that didn't come from nowhere. So I think, like, in the future that bothers me. Like, I get it. Like, in Rogue One, it's stupid when it's just like, hey, look, it's R2 and C-3PO waving at me. Let me go whack off real quick so we can continue the rest of fucking Rogue One. Like, that's really pandering and stupid. But, like, here I expected it, and that... Not only did I expect it, but I wanted it, Matt.
Yeah, it just bothers me. I don't know. I understand what you're saying, but I would have preferred to have a separate story and then, or I don't know, maybe them being introduced in another way. The way they introduced R2 here felt very forced.
No,
I completely disagree. And oh, man. Yeah, and R2, it's not just R2. It's a bunch of astromech droids. And when you saw this movie opening night, easily one of the biggest cheer moments of the whole movie is the first time you see a droid that looks similar to R2-D2 getting blasted the fuck off of one of those Naboo starfighters. The place exploded.
Really?
No question about that one. That's true statement right there.
Fair enough.
So,
yeah,
I mean...
R2's one of those characters that, like, the fact that he wasn't in Force Awakens hardly at all until the very end. I'm fine with. But for this, I'm with Jake. I always heard that these two droids were the story, the story keepers of what we know of the Star Wars universe. So when I first saw it, I'm like, oh, that's awesome. I fucking love R2, you know? And it wasn't like they showcased them right up front, or they did the whole Anakin Skywalker, this is Obi-Wan Kenobi. Like, it wasn't forced like that for me. Like, that R2 seemed a lot more natural. And they had the other droid. What was it?
The forcing him down your throat happens later on, not in this scene.
R5-D4.
Yeah. Yeah, he's in this scene. So it's like, you know, it's a nice little shot. It's not like I feel like they're overdoing it at any point with R2. A little bit with 3PO, but I don't see it with R2.
Yeah, I wanted to see R2 saving the day some way, somehow, in this movie before I saw it.
So I can hear what you're saying, and I would probably agree with you, but as you said a second ago, Jake, it's the rest of it that then tarnishes the R2, like the C-3PO being done by Anakin, and then you get the Jabba.
I was going to skip to that.
Yeah, you get the
you
Jabba.
You don't like that either?
I don't, to be honest. I think that's a bit silly. I think they should have found C-3PO somewhere else, but being made by Anakin, I think, bothers me a lot.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, man. I'm with you on that one. That one, to me, is egregious. I can't stand that one.
Yeah,
the R2 thing doesn't bother me, but with Anakin making C-3PO, it made no sense to me at all whatsoever.
All right, I've got tons of feelings on that, but let's curb that. That's getting way
ahead. All right, let's get back to ourselves. So R2 saves the day.
The other part I like, real quick, the other part I like about R2 is those moments that when I rewatch A New Hope and Ben saying, I never owned a droid before, and he's looking at R2, instead of this like kind of quizzical look, it kind of has more of this, oh shit, I remember you kind of look to it now, as opposed to like, it makes me look at A New Hope differently.
Yeah,
I agree with that. It's one of the fun, the stuff they do with R2 is kind of fun to look back at that. You know, they didn't film the originals that way.
Right.
But the kind of, you know, ambiguity of it all is still kind of there. So,
definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I like that too. Can we talk about the Naboo fighters? I guess we haven't really.
The fighters or the cruiser?
The starships, the Naboo starfighters, I think is officially what they're called, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, do you guys yay or nay on the Naboo starfighter?
I love the designs of those.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, I thought they looked really cool.
Yeah, me as well. I remember the first time I saw them, I could not believe that the toy companies were allowing this. I was like, oh my gosh, the kids are just going to stab each other's eyes out. I was like, so I give them some serious balls for that design. And I love it too. I bought all the vehicles when they came out because I was just like, it was the first time a Star Wars movie came out where I was an adult with a paycheck. So I just was like, I was like feverish, man. I couldn't help myself. So like, if they made it, I bought it. And so I had all the vehicles, you know, all the pods, all the ships. But so I had my Naboo Starfighter, and my mom accidentally vacuumed the freaking missile because the missile was on the ground. And it,
oh no!
It was like the little blue translucent missile. If you had the action figure.
Yep.
My mom freaking vacuumed the thing. I was like, I'm like OCD about like my toys and everything. So if like one little piece is missing, it's like the whole toy is ruined and everything. And so I was so distraught about it that the next time we were at Toys R Us, my mom actually shoplifted me the missile just out of one of the boxes of the Naboo fighter. And I'm pretty sure it was just like, I just overridden her with guilt about this thing. And she was willing to go to jail to shut me the fuck up.
That's awesome.
So, just a quick aside about the Naboo Starfighter.
That's fine.
That toy that I wanted to bring up.
Do you like the design of the cruiser?
Oh, I love it. Which one's the cruiser now? The cruiser's
the shiny, the like, big shiny one.
I like it because like the whole like culture is presented to you like when basically like art is the big thing. And so the queen would basically have the most shiny, like, classic car-looking spaceship of them all, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of like it.
Definitely.
Are you a fan?
Yeah, oh, I love it. I think it's a gorgeous ship, and I think, as I said before, that all the designs in this are very arty and very almost very hot roddy as well, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think, like, a lot of it is attributed to adding Doug Chang to the pre-production concept art team. A lot of the stuff that I really love is all him. Like the Naboo Starfighter's him, the cruiser's him. Like, he did all the droid vehicles and stuff. Like, Chang is brilliant, and Chang still works with Star Wars. Like, if you look at any of the art of Force Awakens books, I mean, they're filled with Chang pre-production art too.
Nice.
Oh yeah, he's still very prominent in those roles. Mm-hmm. But another thing is, you know, Lucas has always been a car guy. He loves all those the hot rods and stuff like that. When you brought that up, if you've seen American Graffiti, I mean, he's all about it.
Yeah, there's definitely influences of it in there, isn't there? It's definitely taken some hot rod inspiration for the fighters.
Have you guys watched it was originally presented on the very first time episode one was brought out on DVD, because episode one, Lucas was kind of a jerk and he put it out on VHS when DVD was pretty much already accepted by everybody.
I remember,
and it was like, you motherfucker, I have to get my VCR out now just so I can watch episode one at home for the first time. But oh gosh, I got sidetracked on this story. Oh, what was the main point about
there was
this?
A documentary was or a short?
Oh, the documentary. Yes, the documentary with Doug Chang. There's like it's the first time, it's like an hour long documentary. It's called In the Beginning, and they show it. I'm pretty sure it's still shown if you have the newest Blu-ray set on one of the bonus feature things. But it's really fascinating, and I encourage everyone to watch it. And they show how it worked, like how George Lucas picks out, you know, the designs for all the stuff in the movie. And like, Chang and the team basically just have a giant like billboard just like full of stuff, and Lucas just comes in with his dabber little pin.
Yes, with his little stamp, and he'll walk by and fucking stamp the shit that he likes, and that he'll make him like expand on it further. He's like, "Ooh, I like this, but I want it tweaked a little bit." And then like, yeah, I remember seeing that.
Yeah, it's really fascinating to see, like, and they show a lot of the stuff with a lot of the Naboo ships and stuff, and a lot of the other designs that didn't make the cut for that. And it's just, it's a really good job of showing the process of the movie. That documentary actually gave me a whole new love of episode one and the actual filmmaking process. It, like, I don't know, it makes it look like Lucas did a lot more work than people gave him credit for, you know?
See, I don't ever think that his design is like what I ever questioned on Lucas. Like, it to me, Star Wars has always looked very uniquely Star Wars, and I love the way Lucas always did that. My problem kind of got with the prequels, where it felt like he wasn't making this for the Star Wars audience that had been waiting years. It felt like he was making this for a whole new generation, and I felt cheated because I wanted more of what I thought Star Wars should have been.
But the
universe always looked really, really good. Like, I never questioned his eye. I questioned more his writing, and in episode one, his directing once we get further into it with, like, Jake Lloyd and shit.
Yeah. And I realized that me talking about George Lucas and his dabber pin at the design board isn't a very good illustration of how much work George Lucas did on episode one.
Well, no, it is.
I think it kind of sums it up.
it really is, because that documentary does show him, like, it wasn't like he was sitting there drawing shit out, but he was going to every department. It wasn't like that department was just set up for that. There were, like, costume departments and shit. Like, he wasn't letting any of the details slip by.
Yeah, and he never seems flustered with what he's doing in, like, the documentary. Like, he never seems like what he's doing is a bad decision, or upset with the way things are going, or rattled, you know? It's very different than if you watch, like, the documentaries for, like, The Hobbit. And watch Peter Jackson on the set of those movies.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, just a quick aside about the Naboo Starfighter and just a lot of the design elements. Doug Chang, I think, is amazing. And if anything amazing came out of the prequels, he might be the most amazing thing to come out of them. So there we go.
Definitely. So so R2 saves the day. And
the whole audience explodes,
yeah,
Matt.
Everyone celebrates. Everyone celebrates but me, who's I'm throwing popcorn at the screen and get up right now. Because I'm a grumpy bastard.
No one notices. We drown you out in our fan service cheering.
That's right.
Dear. So then we get. Where are we?
I like these shots when they're heading right towards the blockade, and you're just getting like the POV out the window, and the Trade Federation is just straight on blasting it, and the camera's kind of shaking a bit along with it. I think those are some fun shots.
Definitely. You get Viceroy report. The Gunray reports to Darth Sidious that the Queen's disappeared before she could sign the treaty. And so this is a bulk standard scene, isn't it?
The Queen disappearing stuff. That kind of cracks me up too. Like, no one's in on this except for the Queen herself. No one can be trusted. I mean, what is going on Naboo? It's like, there must be some very Game of Thronesian level of like politics going on, right? Like, if she can't tell anybody, like even her like most loyal government people. I guess she does tell someone. I guess Captain Panaka.
Yeah, Panaka.
Yeah. He knows because he delivers exposition that tells the audience that the handmaiden is the queen later on. So I guess I'm a little bit exaggerating. She does have people that can be trusted, but the whole thing does seem bizarre.
Like, you know, that guy, Captain Panaka, always cracked me up. I always thought he was like, he looked so frustrated all the time. Like, he was ready to just drop F-bombs at any point.
Yeah.
Well, it's Del, isn't it? Is Panaka? No, that's not. I'm thinking of the pilot. Sorry, who is Del from Wayne's World?
Oh, yeah.
Del Preston. Del, yeah, that's right.
Del Preston. Good. Getting muddled up. So then we get our first appearance of Darth Maul.
Oh, let's talk more about how awesome R2 is.
Oh, fuck off. Fuck you.
Rick Olay is so excited about R2. I don't know why you can't be.
Oh, God.
That little droid did it!
Fucking droid. Fucking trash can on wheels.
Oh, yeah. And also, I think you complain about R2, but to me, the way bigger, like, MacGuffin is, oh, shit, we only have enough gas to get to Tatooine.
I know. Yeah. Well, again, that's the other thing. As I said, Jake, this is the start of it, where everything has to be tied together. And the R2's just the catalyst. If none of the rest of it happened, I would forgive the R2 thing. But then the next hour of the film.
You can't have a fun Star Wars road adventure without R2 and a stop by Tatooine.
No, you can't.
All right, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'll shut up about how awesome R2 is.
No, go on, carry on. We've got another hour to go. You can just talk about R2.
Oh, man. I'm telling you. I'm glad someone here remembers. I'm glad Chris remembers the audience reaction to that scene. It was crazy.
Oh, yeah. It was fucking nuts. Every time, well, first off, as they're dropping like flies one by one, oh my God. And then, oh, that little droid did it. Yeah!
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The gasp of the other ones getting blasted. Oh, man, such good stuff. All right, I really was joking about talking about it more, and then I started talking about it more. they do present R2 to the Queen, too. We kind of yada-yada past that.
No, we haven't yet. That's not yet.
They cut back to do
that.
Yeah, so you get the first appearance of Darth Maul.
I'm trying to yada-yada past Darth Maul.
Yeah, fucking Darth Maul. Best, yeah,
you're
of
like,
the,
more R2!
One of the best parts of the prequels, and you're trying to yada-yada past him and get to a talking
trash
can.
We gotta get back to R2!
So yeah, anyway, so we get our first appearance of Darth Maul, who Sidious is going to send him to locate the Queen, and the Newt Gunray and Rune Hako realize that they're in some deep water. They're a bit fucked.
Yeah, right. I think they kind of, you notice that once Darth, like, I think they're they're naturally afraid of the Emperor.
Oh, gotcha.
But once...
They're fucking idiots if they aren't.
Right. But once Maul comes in, fucking dude is scary looking. Like, you don't see him in his full glory yet, because obviously his face is muted and he's got his hood on. So you don't see the horns and shit. But just that image of him standing there behind him with his arms crossed, fucking, that dude looks scary as fuck. And they actually show that they're even more scared now. Which, who fucking would it be when two Sith Lords pop up in front of you?
Yeah, one thing Star Wars has always nailed is these, like, holo units. These, like,
yeah.
The way characters look during these conversations over whatever communication lines they have.
Yeah, they've always nailed it, haven't they?
Yeah.
So what did you guys think of Darth Maul when, you know, in trailers, in the action figures, and what was your lead up to it, to when you were going to finally get to see this big bad?
I think when I first saw him in the TV trailer, I like was like, oh, fuck. Like, I just remember being like, that dude looks badass. I can't fucking wait. Like, and he's the one part that, like, no one argues about in episode one. Maul was always great.
Well, the only complaint about Darth Maul was that he was underutilized.
Yeah.
You know, that's always been the complaint. That's always been the only one. Because he looks so bad.
Like, you get a fucking awesome character and you know they're going to underuse it.
I don't know. I think Maul serves his purpose and I'm just fine with how much he gets used, honestly.
Really?
And I
thought,
yeah.
I really do. I think he's super cool. Don't get me wrong. I love him, and I was blown away when I first saw him. But I don't know, I kind of like it that Maul doesn't seem like a very smart guy, like in episode one.
He's pretty all much aggression, isn't he?
Yeah,
There's no thought there, it's just aggression and anger.
And it's a stepping stone for Sidious. Like, it's what makes Sidious realize that he really needs to start grooming someone else, because he can't just do this Darth Maul thing over and over again. He's got to really, you know, find someone that's, you know, not going to be complete fury and anger that, yeah. You know, has kind of both sides. And that's when the whole, by episode two, he's grooming Anakin. Yeah, by episode one, he's grooming, you know, the first time he meets right. Anakin. But again, that's post-Darth Maul. So it's kind of like, oh, no, you're wrong about that. I'm wrong about that. That's about halfway in the movie, right?
Mm.
Does Palpatine meet Anakin halfway or at the end?
End.
I think it's
at the end.
It's at the very end. Yep, that's right. That's post Darth Maul, and so I kind of like that plot point with Darth Maul, where it's like Sidious realizes that that's not really the road to go with an apprentice. Though it was a very badass, cool way to go about it, it's not at the end of the day going to be very practical when it comes to trying right. to rule the galaxy.
Yeah, well, yeah. So he was a good tool to have, but he wasn't the apprentice that Sidious needs to get where he wants to go.
Right. And I guess he does have to go knowing the rule of two and everything. Like, I get it, because he does have Dooku kind of in the wings at this point, even already, I would believe.
This specific scene is a point where I start to question the Nemodians too. I know you kind of hinted at it too, Matt, but it's like, man, Darth Sidious has a name that's pretty much on the nose that he's evil, right? Like, there's no...
It's a little bit blatant, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's like, oh, man, look at how sinister this Darth Sidious guy is.
What, isn't he just called Darth Evil?
Yeah. I get it if his name is, like, Pleasant Rainbow, and then he starts pulling this Darth Maul shit on you. You're like... you're like, what the fuck, you know? Like, I would kind of emphasize with the Nemodians more at that point, you know? But it's like, geez, you got in league with Darth Sidious, and now he's got a buddy called Darth Maul. And you're like, oh, damn, these were bad choices. But no, they're scared about him. Like, come on, don't be scared about these choices. They should be happy. If I was a Nemodian and you showed me Darth Maul, I'd be like, well, all right then. We got some firepower.
Yeah, our worries are over.
Yeah. We've been bouncing battle droids off these guys for the last freaking 6 hours.
This guy looks like fucking Jedi. Satan. He'll fuck him up. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I would. If I was Newt Gunray, I would be cheering for Darth Maul. Like, in the next scene, I would have a Darth Maul t-shirt. Like, so I don't even understand the Nemodians' reactions to this whole thing. Like, you're in league with Darth Sidious. It's obvious he's evil. Fucking cheer Darth Maul. Don't be worried.
I kind of agree with you. If you know you're in bed with someone evil and you're trying to do evil shit, fucking the eviler the better, right?
Yeah, exactly. Jeez. Fucking Nemodians. Have some fucking balls.
Yeah. Fuck these guys. They don't know what the hell they're doing.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I'm sorry, Matt.
No, you're good, dude. You just keep going. So now you get some more R2, Jake.
Oh, yes.
The
yes.
Queen personally thanks him.
Oh, yeah. This is a great scene. It's fun. They introduce R2, right? This is where...
Yep. They give you the serial number as if no one knew already.
But I got R2-D2. You hear it said out loud so you can cheer again.
Yeah, exactly. And then the queen or the handmaiden requests the queen. And I think, is this the handmaiden just getting her fucking own back? Going, yeah, that's right, you're royalty. You fucking scrub that droid. giving R2 a bit of a sponge bath.
Yeah, I remember last week when you made me scrub the latrine. Now it's night.
Yeah, exactly. Clean this droid.
Yeah, we're in front of the Jedi. You basically are caught. You have to do it.
Yeah.
The jig is up.
I'll get my own
so,
back.
Yeah, I think the shot they show of Padme cleaning R2-D2 is very reminiscent of
Leia.
Princess Leia front of R2-D2.
Exactly.
Putting the Obi-Wan message, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly it. I think that was the nod they were going for. But I just wondered why, whether it was something Padme wanted to do or it was just the handmaiden getting her own back for something that Padme had done to her, making her wear fucking crazy headdresses or something. I don't know.
Well, finally, we got something that you want to talk about R2 with, though. I'm sorry I tried to get past that.
Oh, God. I don't hate R2. Just forget it. I'm done.
No, I know you don't hate R2. I know you don't. What you hate is just the, here it is. It's just all of a sudden there.
It's the same as the fucking cantina guys in Rogue One. It just didn't need to be as obvious as it was.
Yeah. If you See, that's put, the thing.
Go on.
Oh, I was going to say, I completely agree with you, except for R2. Like, he does need to be there.
Yeah, it could have been a little bit subtler. Like the whole, oh, this is R2-D2, rather than just him sort of gradually, I don't know. I honestly
You
don't
didn't
know.
Want such a harsh punch in the face with
exactly.
R2.
And as I said,
kind of like, you wanted a little lube and bring it in gently.
Yeah, I didn't just want to go in raw, you know. Blood is not a natural lubricant.
I don't know how you do it, though. It's like, if you have to have R2 as a character in this movie, I don't see... Like, you have to introduce him in a way like this, right?
Yeah.
Like, what else can you do? Like, oh, R2 was hiding in the back seat of Naboo Starfighter.
You could already have him being Padme's droid or part of... Rather than introducing
right.
him in such
Padme.
A...
That's exactly
Yeah,
that's
but
exactly
rather than
he
in,
is.
Rather than introducing him in such a heroic way and such a kind of... A tropey way, I suppose.
Have him part of her entourage.
Yeah, have him already be part of it, and just.
Do you want like the Batman Begins R2-D2, where before we see R2 doing everything awesome, we're seeing him like falling off the roof and shit.
I want to see some R2 training.
R2's not allowed to be awesome the moment we see him and fucking save the day.
Oh, what an R2 training montage.
Yeah. Fucking Rocky music.
Through the snow with the fucking log
Hearts
on his,
fire.
On his dome.
I want to see R2-D2 taking like 90 minutes or more to get up the flight of stairs.
Where is this gone? Still gone
no,
wrong.
This is exactly where it should go. I don't get how they can like if R2 has to be in here.
Yeah,
and you agree to that, right?
I agree to that. My problem being is that this is the start of it, and after this, there's just a progression of really blatant Easter eggs that didn't need to be there.
Like You're talking like Jabba.
I'm talking Jabba. I'm talking 3PO. Greedo, 3PO. Tatooine didn't even need to be there. They didn't need to fucking go to Tatooine.
Right.
I agree with some of these things, but I don't agree with blaming R2 for it as the catalyst.
I don't blame R2 as the catalyst.
You said it started with right. R2. That's the definition of a catalyst.
I just got to take a pause for a minute, all right, guys? And we're back. So that's where we're going to have to leave it, unfortunately, this time. My little boy has woken up and caused all sorts of havoc. So we will pick this up next time, and we'll get to
visit. If only R2-D2 was there to save the day for you.
Yeah, but right? He wasn't, because he's shit. no, he wasn't here, unfortunately. He couldn't soothe my son to sleep. So, he doesn't get any reward. He doesn't get a lovely sponge bath from a princess. He just gets left in the way. So, thanks for joining us, Chris.
Oh, my pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
No, you're very welcome anytime. So, we will pick it up next time, and we will get to talk about Tatooine and how much we all hate stuff on that planet.
Spoiler, some of us don't.
You must hate something on that planet, Jake.
I do. The there worst joke go. Of the whole movie happens there.
And some of the worst acting of the whole movie.
Some of the worst acting of any movie, actually. But
pretty much. So, that's it. May the Force be with you.
Okie day.
Take it easy.
Later.